Well, good afternoon. I appreciate the opportunity, Dare, to join your session, and look forward to sharing what we've done at the American Hereford Association on our udder and teat evaluation that we have. Maybe? All right. So kind of the initial work and why we wanted to address this at the American Hereford Association are a couple things that I wanted to point out. Obviously, we kind of heard it talk today during the commercial producer session with those folks wanting that in their cow herds, the desire to go out in the pasture and look at a high-quality udder, I think, is a desire that all of us should have as we go. But it's a little tricky because it's more of a convenience trait as it is maybe an economic trait. Unless you get to those extreme cases, right? And so those are kind of the points that I want to make with this slide, and this would be more of those extreme cases that we would have with, you know, some udders or teat size that may be unacceptable that cause that associated labor cost and that reduced convenience when we have to help assist that cow nurse out and nurse down where that young calf can get a hold and get that first colostrum. Longevity, obviously, is a concern as those we want those females to experience more time in the herd, more production value, and the incidence of mastitis is definitely going to increase there on those poor udders and the teat size there, calf performance. We can definitely see a loss in those younger calves because of, you know, that inability for them to get into that first intake as newborn calves. And my last point that I make is perception, a perceived perception. The American Hereford Association began collecting these scores going back in the early 90s or even further back in that within the performance program. Our breeders had the ability to record and put those records into the database. It wasn't until 2015 until we actually launched the evaluation. And so I think that's the saying goes is admitting that you have an area of concern as a breeder and a breed improvement kind of a department to address that. And it was well before my time, and so I can't take the credit for that. But the former board members and the leaders of our association thought it was very critical to at least start recording those values and then beginning to develop that EPD analysis that we released. And so it's my belief by the time that this trade actually came out that for the most part that perceived perception that maybe that we had at one time had already been addressed and we were on the rise. And I think you'll see that based off of the genetic trend that I show. So it was first released as a PBLUP analysis in 2015. We updated it in December of 17 with the mixed marker effects model utilizing the Bolt software where we added the genomic component to it. The other thing that's important to note when this first this trait was recorded by breeders, and I think it was by the direction of BIF, there was a presentation that was gave in 2008 where they recommended, the BIF committee, guidelines committee, recommended that udder and teat be split into two different traits rather than just one. And so prior to that time, folks were just rescoring from 9 to 1, a score of just udder quality. And then in 2008, we split it apart from 9 to 1. I see Heather Bradford back there. She was instrumental in that research that was done at Kansas State to help form this EPD. And actually, when we started looking and utilizing those total observations of udder quality, the correlation of the two traits was 0.74, and so they were highly correlated to move on. But today, it's a repeated measures model where we're getting observations on those females after each calving. the recommended scoring and the that we require is within 24 hours of calving. That information goes on a birth worksheet and that registration worksheet, and so it's very handy, and it's a scoring system from 9 to 1, with 9 being the best and 1 being the worst. Okay? And so 9 on the left talks about udder suspension, and on the right would be teat size. And so we go from 9 to 1, 1 would be the poorest score. There are observations, phenotypes that can be recorded in between those from simplicity standpoints. This is what we use to help breeders kind of recognize the range rather than putting out 9, 8, 7, and all that. We kept it pretty simple. They can record a 26 if they want, or if they want to record a 98, they can. We use all those scores throughout that. So here's some scoring. So let's do some scoring together. Obviously, it took some training and to get used to that rubric that you base that udder scoring off of. And so who thinks on the far right that is the best udder and teat score? That's good. You've passed the test. And so we do work from left to right here with the highest quality udder. That would be a 9.9 that we put out. 7.4 in the middle there. Pretty good suspension. Teats are definitely maybe not as desirable. And then on the left is a 33. So you may be thinking and saying, well, I scored that first one a 77. And I scored that middle one an 82. Just like Kelly's discussion and the foot scoring and a lot of the other novel traits and convenience traits that we have, Cavanese would be no different. It's all relative to the contemporary group, and we recommend that the same score, and I'm looking at Pete Atkins and Kevin Schultz, Jim Bellis there, setting breeders in the audience here, that the same score scores all of those cows. Not that, you know, you switch night duty and all that, but, you know, the same score needs to score all of those females when they calve where you're consistent within your ranch. That's the beauty of an EPD, that we can compare across herds and across genetics and take out that environmental component or that scorer's maybe bias that they have relative to a higher scale than maybe what you would call it versus myself. And so it works very good. And the repeatability, the heritability of this trait, I think, is working extremely well. So here's the genetic trend. I started from 2001 and ran it to 2019 of kind of what's happened with our udder and teat evaluation. Udder is in blue, and that is the first score on the chart, just like we started from the left. That represents udder suspension. The orange line would be teat size. And you can see a very nice trend line starting from 2001. Actually, part of our genetic evaluation, we pruned off some of the older data prior to whole herd reporting. And so our database is solely built around whole herd reporting unless they're connected through those performance animals through three generations of pedigree. And so this trend line shows the data of whole herd reporting. Those observations were coming in, but it wasn't until 2015 until you can kind of see where those animals, a little steeper trend line, actually having that trait reported, where folks could see those phenotypes going to work. And I think that's the beauty of an EPD, that you can actually visualize it out in the pasture, but also marry it up to what is being recorded. So you can, from 2001 to 2014, there's about a tenth improvement in terms of that genetic trend. From 2015 to mid-year here in 2019, we've seen a tenth improvement in genetic progress. And so having that EPD available, being able to make progress based off of that, I think is a great testament to what our breeders have been able to see and what bowl selection they've been able to add. So the application of it using the Utter and TDPD, we've got two bowls. And I think this is pretty critical, and I know we have some later talks about fertility and the value of being able to discover some of these type of concerns that we might have later on in life. And udder and teat would obviously be a great one in a young bull that gets marketed for six figures, that we want to ensure and safety up as much as we can on that animal, that they're going to have good daughters. And so this is a great trait. Without that, we would have to lean on stockmanship and cow families, and I don't think that goes away in this process. It's a tandem of both. And what's amazing, I think, is those producers being able to interact with them and see their cow herds and go through them, these udder scores line up very well to what their opinions are of their cow families and how it's tracked. And so we've got bull A that has a 1.6 EPD, and then we have bull B that has an udder EPD of 1.1. So the difference in those two bulls would be a 0.5, 5/10 of an udder score. And so you've got a half a score udder improver in bull A. He would be the bull that you would select for to tighten up udder suspension and move that on average, if comparably mated and ran in the same environment, you would expect bull A to move that udder attachment up a half a score. And so that's pretty good between those two bulls, and it's definitely adding some good. So kind of wrap up here, the heritability estimates, again, a fairly moderate heritable trait. You can definitely make progress in. Udder is at a 0.31. Our teat EPD is at a 0.28. The range, I kind of put the same range for both. It'd be close to that. So the max or the most ideal score we would have in kind of our percentile band of young calves now would be at a 1.9. And then the lowest score would be at a 0.5. There's not a lot of folks that are necessarily, and the mean would be around 1.2 for both traits. And so you can kind of see that distribution shifted, you know, a little bit more to the top side. And I think that's one thing, again, to our breeders and what they've been able to do. There's not a lot of them that are just wanting to keep poor quality udder and teat females or bulls that sire those kind of genetics. And so it leans a little bit more to the top side of that bell curve. The other thing that we make available to users that want to search for Hereford Genetics is our website through our EPD search. And so you can log on to hereford.org and then click on that EPD search there on the right. I see Cody Sankey over there. He loves our search engine that we have because he can put in all of his requirements and be able to find the bulls that meets their procurement. So you can hit guest access. You don't have to be an authorized user. Hit that guest access there on the right, and then you've got all this crazy-looking chart to dig through. It's intense, right? So you've got all kinds of options to look at. You can put in that calving year and say, I want to find a bull coming up for the 2020 sale season. I can put in the 2019 born animals. I can refine that to bulls and another selective drop-down button right here. I can make sure they've been genomically enhanced. I can put my preference of horned or pulled, whatever that may be. And I can set these min and maxes. And I think the application of this trait, because it's more of a convenience trait opposed to just a straight-up profitability trait like some of the ERTs that we have, is that folks are maybe setting a standard as far as their min of what they will tolerate as breeders within their herds. And then they work off of some of the other traits, or they say, okay, I want calving ease, I want sustained cow fertility, I want mature cow weight to be this size, set some min and maxes, and then rank them on utterance teat size. And so that's, there's a lot of flexibility that you can get in our system and sort on these animals a lot of different ways. But that's, I think, you know, one of those neat things that we offer. And I think talking with our breeders, this is something that is very, makes them really offer a marketable product when they can sit down and have those conversations with their commercial customers. They want a bull that, you know, checks the boxes and these things, and they can say, oh, yeah, you know, the udder quality and the teat quality is phenomenal in this cow family, and look at this EPD of 1.5 backs it up, you know. And so the proof's kind of in the pudding, and this trait has allowed us, I think, to change a lot of minds, and it's very refreshing, I think, to go out within the industry now and see our breeders applying a very important trait into their selection process. So, Dare, with that, I'll entertain any questions. Okay, so just to clarify, the question was asked, you said that a one score, the phenotypic score, was the best score. It's actually inverse. And so a 9 is the best phenotype score on teat size, and then 1 would be that balloon coarse teat that we'd want to avoid. Okay, so 9 would be the most ideal score, and that becomes personal preference. If that teat is too short or too refined for your liking, and then maybe that's a trait, teat size, it's EPD, that you don't put as much selection pressure on, okay? But that is still, you know, the highest score that can be given out. We're not saying it's necessarily the most ideal, and that's a personal preference, no different than milk, birth weight, cavities, wherever that threshold is at for your own operation, that's your call as a breeder. The second question that you ask is on the EPD. That is a numeric value. Okay, it really means nothing relative to the EPD itself. It's just used for finding the difference among animals. And so that's the critical point to understand, is that no different than a 55 yearling weight and or a 55 weaning weight and a 45 weaning weight, that difference doesn't equate to, you know, that difference of those animals is 10, and we'd expect 10 in that phenotype observed of 750 pounds or whatever that equivalent would be. The EPD is just on its scale. We could have made that scale whatever it is, but it doesn't necessarily represents the observations of the 9-to-1 scale, but it's no different than any other EPD value where we're just concerned with the difference between two animals.
I might have, just if you think about it, the same thing like you said with calving ease. We see calving ease EPDs that are 10, 12, 15, whereas the score is 1-to-5. And so We're looking at the, in particularly like with calving ease, it's the percent differences in calving difficulty. And so we don't think of that EPD in the same scale as what that score that we gave them. So it is, it's on two different bases.
Bert? That's a great question. And, you know, I don't have the answer to that. Our udder and teat evaluation is a standalone trait in its own model, and so, you know, we don't have milk as a correlated trait within the model. It's all independent of one another, and so can't answer your question. We were just talking about a bull there earlier that would rank in the top 10% for sure of the breed. That would be a trait leader for milk. And so you can find, you know, animals on each side of that pendulum. And that was the concern, I think, initially when this trait was launched, that all of those really nice udder suspension cows wouldn't milk and they wouldn't produce enough milk. And that's not the case. That's not the case. Yes, sir. It's a great question that I don't have a answer to for that, but it's an interesting point. Within 24 hours. Yeah, I think within the initial work that was done, you know, kind of preparing the EPD analysis and what literature and information was out there, I get your point that was made. But, you know, trying to get that udder and that suspension kind of looked at before it's totally, you know, nursed out and changed, where we, again, are consistent, you know, within, you know, the contemporary group there for that.